Good morning. This is Sharon Hall with Talking FTD, and I'm joined today by Dr. Borna Bonuk-Dapour. Pretty good, huh, Dr. B? Dr. B is an assistant professor of neurology for the Cognitive Neurology and Alzheimer's Disease Center at the Ken and Ruth Davey Department of Neurology at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine. Thank you so much for having us today, Dr. B. We're going to call you Dr. B.
Thank you so much for having me, Sharon. It's great to be here.
We know that music has been shown to improve the quality of life for people with all dementias, including FTD. And I wanted to know if you thought that we as care partners with those for FTD should incorporate music into our daily routine for our FTD people.
Yes, that's a great question. So I think including music in everyday care of patients with dementia, of course it first relies on the fact that if they like to listen to music, most people do like to listen to music. We have our headphones all the time we have music on our phones. There might be other people who may not actually be into music as much. So I think that the fact that the background and then the history of a person is important. But if there's an interest, then definitely, yes. We know that music can help with some of the agitation, some of the anxiety, some of the neuropsychiatric symptoms of patients with dementia, including FTD. There's been more research on Alzheimer's disease than on FTD, but the ones that have been done on FTD, they show that definitely for the agitation and anxiety and symptoms, neuropsychiatric symptoms like that, music definitely helps. For other areas, we'll talk more. We need to do more research, and then we can get into the details of them as we speak.
On that note, knowing that it helps people with anxiety and the behaviors and some of the psychological things that we deal with every day, what about people with primary progressive aphasia who have lost their ability to speak? How do we know what to do musically and what they even, we can understand what they used to like, but how can we figure out what might be best?
Right. Another great question. Aphasia is a very interesting, the relationship between aphasia and music was very interesting. The research I did years ago, and other people have done it, of course, in stroke aphasia, strongly supports the role of music and in music interventions in people who have non-fluent aphasia. So now we are talking not about the anxiety and neuropsychiatric symptoms. We are actually talking about music as an intervention that can help with rehabilitation of language. So in that sense, the question was, how about at PPA? PPA is a neurodegenerative disease. And in terms of, music as a rehab tool for patients with PPA, there's not much out there in terms of research. I experimented with few patients, but very, very few. It's just not enough data right now to say anything. But we got to realize, in a person with stroke, you have the lesion in right-handers in the left side of the brain. And the right side, which relies on processing of music, is usually intact. So that's why they're really good at processing music. And then singing, for example, can help. If it's used methodically, can help with their recovery from aphasia. With PPA, the story is different. Patients with PPA may actually have some pathology in the right hemisphere. So the question is, how do they do in terms of music? I think it's important to see how they respond. Are they able to repeat melodies? And how they respond to music to kind of gauge the fact that how music can help in terms of rehab. In terms of psychological aspects, again, it depends on how the processing of music is intact or not. In patients with severe semantic PPA, when PPA or aphasia turns into dementia, full dementia. Unfortunately, during the late stages, they may not even be able to recognize the melodies or name the melodies or recognize them or even the singer. Now, I had a patient with semantic dementia, and then we were trying to figure out, you know, for quality of life, if we can use music. And she was a fan of Elvis. I pulled up Elvis's YouTube video, and unfortunately she wasn't able to recognize neither the melody or the song, which was very famous, or even Elvis himself, because there was a visual agnosia. So again, you know, the severity and stage of the disease is important. On the other hand, we have read about patients with PPA, because again, it's a left hemisphere pathology in right-handers. They develop new interest in art and music. So there's that aspect too. And then I think it depends on how much pathology we have in the right hemisphere. So yes, that actually can become even a new interest for patients with PPA, because now that they are deprived of the language communication, they can use artistic, aesthetic, visual, spatial, painting, or auditory music ways of communication as their expression, or, you know, to enjoy them. You know, they may like to go to museums or listen to music. So it's kind of complicated with PPA.
Well, I know we have a lot of people that deal with PPA that listen to this podcast, so I want to make sure we included them, because, you know, this sure. is sometimes difficult when they lose their speech for us to know exactly what is best.
And I think, you know, that's a very good point. And even people with behavioral variant FTD at some point will develop language issues too. You know, they have difficulty with word finding. And so I think it'll cover all sorts of, all the spectrum of FTDs, you know, language issues.
Now, as far as the volatility in behavior variant FTD, at what point, if someone is becoming volatile, does music calm that, or is music just part of their daily routine to keep them calm? Do both of those apply, or, you know, can we turn music on when we know that there's a trigger that has been set and they are going to become volatile? At that point, does it do any good to turn on music, or does music just need to be part of the day?
I think it can be part of the day. You know, as all of us listen to music whenever we like, you know, whatever pleases us. And I think whatever works and whatever a person enjoys, I think the general prescription is to do it, whatever works. And it doesn't have to be a prescription. In terms of having it as a scheduled intervention, I would recommend talking to a music therapist, because they are the experts, they're the clinicians that use music for therapeutic effects. And they can come up with, for example, a list of, you know, pieces to listen to. And it doesn't have to be necessarily all day. It could be, you know, as short as maybe 30 to 40 to 30, 60 minutes per day. And then sometimes we do actually see after effects for a long time. So that can help too. Again, if having it on all day works for the patient, why not? But if we want to use it methodically, you know, on a dose-based basis, it's good to talk to a music therapist and see. I mean, and this is for the sake of agitation and anxiety, to see how it's best to be administered. And then also, you know, there is recorded music versus live perform music. And then live perform music is a music where you go to concerts and you're part of an audience, or it could be actually in form of a live musician playing for a group of individuals with FTD or dementia, or even one-on-one. So there's very, very different ways to administer music for individuals with dementia.
Now, you know, Zoom has become so popular during this period of COVID. Is it better to watch like a live performance on Zoom to better engage people, because a lot of times people with FTD do a lot of TV watching. And in that respect, would that help integrate the music if it was sort of a program you're watching? Because, you know, a lot of these TVs now can get on the internet and can look at YouTube videos and so forth of live performances. So is the combination good to have that combination?
Yes, definitely. With videos and TV, we've had interesting reactions from our patients during the COVID pandemic. Again, it depends. I mean, it's sometimes difficult to prescribe for everybody because every single individual is different.
Right.
They were individuals who went through the pandemic not with much problem. They were people who actually had a lot of issues because, for example, I got a call about someone with dementia who would get confused watching the TV because TV anchors were at their houses. They were broadcasting from their houses. And then the individual was confused as to what's going on. You know, some of the issues we had during the pandemic is people with dementia not quite understanding what the situation is. So he actually would get very anxious, thinking that the anchor was in their house.
Right, so I can see where that would happen,
yeah. So that can happen. But if that's not an issue, yes. So live music, and this has been shown in music cognition in general, where when we see people performing, the effect, the emotional effect is more, it's stronger. Because you can see the way the performer performs the instrument. This has actually been shown that, you know, seeing a concert has more emotional effect than just listening on through a recorded device or through a radio or online. Another way to administer it, and we've been trying to work with that during the pandemic, is if you have a musician playing for an individual with dementia, what they like to hear, you know, the songs that or genre they like to hear, or even improvise for them, which we found that we are actually seeing that it has very good effect in calming people down, and it has some after effects. So people actually may stay calm for the rest of the day as well. I mean, we had actually people who, you know, we had a concert and then we had live performance, and they said, oh, you know what? I mean, the rest of our day was so enriched and we were so calm the rest of the day. So, you know, that's really nice, you know, when you have an after effect in a patient with dementia. That means you won't necessarily need medications to use for agitation.
Right, right. And, you know, there's so much talk now about using antipsychotics in dementia and looking for ways that you don't have to increase the doses and those types of things. I you know, my husband is on some, but he has behavior variant and does have outbursts. And so in order for me to keep him at home, I do have to use some to keep him calm.
Yes, sometimes there's no other option.
Yeah, so I'm kind of on the fence on that when they say don't use antipsychotics. I'm a little on the fence with that one. Is there a particular genre of music that might be better for volatility, anxiety, sleep? I know music can help you sleep as well. Are there particular genres, or does it just depend on what the person likes?
I think in IA, we should first based on what the patient likes. But they are, I mean, if you look at the music as a structure that it can be scientifically manipulated, you know, certain instruments might be more favorable than others. You know, for example, a loud trumpet may not necessarily work compared to an organ, for example, or, you know, depending on patient's mood, it might be different too. I mean, maybe a mid-register, something like a alto register may work better than a very high register instrument or very low register. So it depends on the person, because the person might have been a bassist and then they may love to hear in a lower register music. Usually, you know, for calming down, and we are talking about the effect of music on the parasympathetic system, and, you know, decreasing the rate of breathing, decreasing the heart rate, decreasing the blood pressure. These are all happening when people get agitated. So if we try to calm those down, that would be where we see the effect of calming. And in those cases of a very slow music with not necessarily a very defined tonal center, it's kind of like the space type music that you hear, you know, you heard in the 1980s, you know, type what they used in what is it called, in the new age music or in the meditation music. So a lot of the meditation music I've listened to actually do follow that rule of, you know, there's no tonal center. You know, you feel like you're floating. It's how being in the water calms us, or being by the ocean calms us. So that type of music. And then it's interesting. Some of them actually could, some type of music can emulate nature sounds.
Yeah.
Or ambient sound. So those type of music is actually very, very helpful. And then, you know, the other aspect is the music triggering imagery or imagination in the brain when people are listening to it. You know, when I sometimes listen to those kind of music, you know, it just brings in this, you know, what's called a synesthesia. You know, other senses get activated, and then you feel like you are floating or you are flying like a bird. I know these kind of feelings can be enlivened by music. So I think in terms of genre, yes, I mean, there are certain type of music. I know you, probably a very, you know, hard rock, very loud and rhythmic and busy music may not be a good idea for someone who's agitated. You need something slower with very, you know, prolonged notes. And as I said, not necessarily very tone based in terms of the centrality of the tone.
And it could just be playing like in the background type of thing. It's not like
it could be in the background, or it could be just as a session where someone plays it, or, you know, the person will lay down and listen to it if they can. I find the interactive music performance by a musician or a music therapist, because they can actually interact with the patient, with the person with dementia. If they breathe in a certain way, they can kind of get cues for that. If they move in a certain way. So live music with someone who is very attuned to the person's movements and breathing and body language, that would be the best, actually. But that's not always possible. But having it in the background always helps. And especially if this is something that the person with dementia recognizes and appreciates it.
And now, how do we go about finding a music therapist?
That's a great question again. We have, I believe, more than 5,000 music therapists in the United States. They are everywhere. And I was at one of the music therapy conferences back in March. I was very impressed by how many people showed up at the conference, hundreds and hundreds. And so the major association involved in music therapy is American Music Therapy Association, or AMTA. They have a website, and you can use the website to find people within different locations. And I think just a Google search can sometimes, you know, you can find people within the vicinity. I believe if you talk to, for example, you know, AFTD or Alzheimer's Association, they may have some information about, you know, music therapists. I'm not sure if everybody knows about it, though. But it's becoming more and more part of the care of dementia patients. You see, you know, music a lot in care of dementia patients, actually more than even any other neurologic disease.
I do know that a lot of hospices have a music therapist.
Yeah.
When my mother was in hospice, she would come every couple of weeks for a session, and that was very good. So maybe we could see if we can't find anybody, if we call a hospice and say, do you have a music therapist? And could they recommend someone that could come to my home on a regular basis? That might be a way of doing it, wouldn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And a lot of hospices do use music therapists. I know a lot of facilities, you know, memory care facilities, they yeah. Many of them do have music therapists visiting a few times per week. And it's because it works, you know. Yeah.
Now, if we, you know, a lot of times we have a lot of apathy involved with FTD, and it's hard to get people to get up and move around sometimes. Would putting on like an exercise video with lively music help, or would just lively music be something that we could stimulate them to get up and like dance with us or something like that?
Potentially, yes. You know, we had an intervention in a memory facility with Institute for Therapy Through the Arts here in Chicago area. And it was very interesting, you know, having worked in memory facilities, I know how individuals with dementia are. And it was so fascinating to see when they were listening to music, the ones who were on the apathetic side, they would just become alive. They would sing along, they would dance. However their physical abilities, like, you know, some people with Parkinson may not be necessarily able to get up and dance that fast, but maybe slowly. But even the ones with Parkinson do benefit from music exposure. Yes, dance therapy by itself, that's definitely another area of interest. And I do send people, you know, for music and dance therapy, both. So, and then yes, it does help with apathy. You know, well, one of the things we looked at was social engagement in individuals with dementia. A lot of the patients who were part of this intervention, this is what we just presented actually at the Alzheimer Association meeting. They had, you know, verbally they were not engaged with their spouses. There was this distance between them. And interestingly, with music, while, you know, we had this dyad of a patient with dementia and then their care partner, they would have, you know, percussion instruments, they would play together, they would dance together. We looked at their social engagement and communication before we videotaped them, before and after the intervention. And after 3 months of intervention, it was very interesting to see that the communication between them really improved. It wasn't all verbal, but even, you know, the body language, the eye contact, you know, things that we use that are nonverbal, those really improved. So yes, the music, I mean, emotionally, music connects people. And that's something that may not actually happen verbally, especially in the later, moderate to stage to the stages of the disease. So yes, all that you mentioned, they do help, and I think they are recommended.
I would imagine, I mean, music, you know, they say is the universal language. So even in people that don't have language, music is still meaningful, correct?
Very much, very much so. You know, when you read about the anthropological origins of music or the philosophical aspects of music, one of the first things that comes to mind is, why people use music. And, you know, one of the basic things that you hear is the relationship, the bonding, relationship between a mother and a child by, you know, singing lullabies, or, you know, in terms of the romantic interaction between people. You know, music is a big part of it. So music does have a lot of effect on emotions and social bonding. And then that can be one of the major issues in FTDs. We know that, you know, the social aspect of social cognition and social processing might be affected in these individuals. And music can help. And again, you know, this is if people can process it well and if it's administered correctly.
That's good to know. I use Alexa to play music a lot, but as sort of a background in the day. But would it be better to have a more structured part of the day to actually concentrate on music?
You know, again, whatever works, I would say do it. So that's for sure. Yeah, I mean, whatever works. And then, you know, because individuals are so different. If you want to do it in on a structured base, I would definitely talk to a music therapist, because they are the ones who can tell you when and how long and how to use it. You know, I would usually go to the experts to, you know, prescribe how and with what dose and how many times and how many times per week, if you want to use it with a structure. But, you know, having it in the background, or, you know, having an Alexa music list, that's a great idea. I think that's a great idea. And then, again, you know, you get feedback from the person too. If they respond well to it, you do it more. If they don't respond well, you don't do it. So I think, you know, that should be in our mind all the time. You know, there's nothing that we should enforce on individuals. Whatever they enjoy, we do it more.
Uh-huh. You know, a lot of times, especially kind of in the earlier stages of FTD with the anxiety and the reactions and the, you know, abuse, sometimes verbal abuse and so forth. Is it good or is it bad if we sort of try to drown that out with music? I mean, I'm just thinking that, you know, sometimes I never react. I always say, you're right. I don't fight when he wants to fight.
Yeah.
So he's always right, and I apologize and all of that. But would, at that time, if I started to play some music, would that maybe, is it good for diversion? I guess.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, you said it. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, when things happen between, you know, spouses and care partners and the individual with dementia, we always recommend, you know, to kind of move on and try to distract. In fact, because their attention span is not as good, they tend to be more distractible, and then they can be redirected. It's not always the case, but, you know, it's mostly, and it's never recommended to engage in back and forth. And sometimes, you know, the thing is the verbal communication and reasoning just doesn't work. So diverting to some, you know, communication that is nonverbal, like music or dancing or anything else, walking, anything that is nonverbal, might be actually the best thing to do. And then that's why, you know, you've heard that saying that when language stops working, music starts working, right? So absolutely. They are, you know, it also depends, you know, remembers me a scene from the movie Immortal Beloved. It was The Life of Beethoven, where one of his woman friends had lost his her children during the war with France. And then he goes to visit her, and there's really nothing to talk about. Effect of such an emotional loss was so much that he just said, why don't we just play? Let music be the communication tool for us. So I think, in some cases, you know, verbal communication, reason doesn't work, and then, you know, then you try to use art.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, a lot of times people with FTD have sleep issues. With playing music, you know, a softer, like the spa music and those type of meditation music, would that be good at bedtime? Could we, you know, set some sort of, like, play it for an hour or whatever to sort of relax someone? Would that help?
Definitely. Definitely. Again, you know, the same thing that we talked about anxiety and then calming down the nervous system and activating the parasympathetic system by reducing the heart rate, reducing the respiratory rate, and then the blood pressure. Same thing applies for sleep. There have been studies that show, even white noise can help. And, you know, sometimes I mean, you have the ability to, I mean, if you know, scientifically, you can even change the white noise in a way that it really is attuned with person's brain waves. But yes, with music, and it's interesting you brought it up because we are doing some intervention in the hospital now with some of our neurologic patients, all sorts of neurologic patients. And many of them actually sleep during the session because they're exhausted. They, you know, in the hospital, they didn't get enough sleep. So it actually does help. Yes. And yes, a calming music, again, whatever works for the person and would like, he or she would like it. It's recommended. And again, you know, the choice of instrument is important too. An organ is probably better than a violin, probably, you know, because you need that sustained sound. But again, you know, even violin or viola, I mean, it depends on how you play it. I mean, if there are ways to, you know, have these sustained notes with not much ups and downs that can calm people down, like the floating I told you about earlier.
Yeah, it's. I think, like everything else, it's experimentation. Would you agree?
Yes, and you know, you can always, again, you know, get ideas from clinicians who are trained in this area. Again, you know, with music therapists, they can, you know, help people with the choices as well.
In talking about that volatility and maybe, you know, intervening with music, I personally feel that it also helps the care partner calm down.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, there are some things that are said that no matter what, you're human and you have a tendency to take things personally. And as hard as we try, there are days when we're tired and we just don't want to hear that. So it might be a good suggestion for us to use music, even for just ourselves,
absolutely,
to de-escalate the situation.
Absolutely, and I'm so glad you mentioned that. Again, with the same study I mentioned to you here, we did, we had a dyad. I mean, you can't have an individual with dementia and not include their care partner. So they are always actually part of the interventions that we do here. And then we actually did show that the amount of stress that the care partner was under decreased with the administration of music. Because the person with dementia had something else to do, and then they communicated better through music with their partner. So then that's really heartwarming, right? Because, you know, it's very difficult to go through the lack of empathy and the agitation and the change of behaviors for spouses and care partners. It's very difficult. And no matter how much you know about the disease, it's something that, you know, relates to the bonding and our experience and the previous memories and everything. So it really hurts. Listening music and engaging in musical activity does actually help with that. We've looked at it, and other people have actually looked at it as well, that it does decrease caregiver burden and distress. And exactly, you know, like any other individual, care partners can benefit from it as well.
Right.
In fact, you know, we were hoping we can even look at the brain networks and brain function to see how that works in both the individual with dementia and their care partners. It's going to be a very interesting thing to look at.
Yes, because, you know, we come across these times when we're busy doing something and all of a sudden we're in the middle of of being called names or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's very distracting.
Very
and
much.
Like I said, sometimes you just have a reaction. It's human nature. I mean, I try to practice as much as I can to just disengage and apologize. I apologize a lot. I take the blame for a lot of things because what difference does it make? It keeps things calm. But, you know, there are times when, like,
that's
the jump right out of my skin. So
yeah.
I'm thinking that it might be a good time to intervene with music.
That's
and
very
have
good
that
idea.
Music already with something like Alexa, like say, Alexa, play Stress, and you have a whole genre of music that comes on, you know,
yeah.
just for Stress.
Yeah.
So that would be, so having sort of a playlist for different situations is probably a good idea. Is that right?
Yeah. That's a very good point too. Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, Alexa, almost everybody has Alexa now, and I find that to be useful when I do play music. It's, you know, just, it's in the room, and,
yes.
you know, just there.
It can set the mood.
Yeah. Are there any specific things that you'd like to tell us that we haven't covered yet about music and dementia?
I think we covered almost everything, you know. I think there's also singing. I think we probably didn't talk about singing. We have singing groups in Chicago. There are, you know, group singing. There's a memory choir, those are other musical activities that can be done. You know, right now with the pandemic situation, they're a little more limited. But people have been really creative and have been doing things virtually as well. And then the other thing is to show, and we need more research to show the efficacy of music in individuals with dementia, especially with FTD. I think what is lacking, there's really not much out there in terms of music and FTD. There are a few studies, and then they're very, you know, small studies. We don't have it in a larger scale. And hopefully we can do more in this area. I have a resident now who's interested in that, and then hopefully we can do more. And then to support the research and to support coverage of, and when we have more evidence, then, you know, I think we can convince the insurance companies to reimburse for that service, because I think in some states it's still, I know in Illinois it's still not easy to get reimbursed, which makes it a more expensive way of intervention if insurance is not paying for it. But I think it should eventually be part of our interventions. And then I think the way things are happening now, it will be, because, you know, we can see the effects very dramatically sometimes.
Yeah, and I would think that would, you know, just cutting down on the antipsychotics, if that can be part of it, you know, I think they're always trying to not do that. I read a report recently about how many, I think it was today, how many people with dementia have opioids in their daily routine. It just, why? I mean, why? It doesn't seem to me like that's a good combination. But, you know, those kinds of things, if you can get rid of some of that in your medications, that's probably a good thing, right?
Definitely, yes. That's the goal. I mean, the least we can, but we really don't have really great medications for, you know, some of the medications like SSRIs. They're okay. They're well tolerated. They're not that many if they're used carefully. But, you know, when things are more dramatic, unfortunately, we don't have good choices. They all have side effects. But sometimes we just have to use them. And then if we can kind of avoid that, by any type of non-pharmacological intervention, it saves lives.
So in closing here, I think the takeaway is probably that we should think about music more in the course of our caregiving day. Would that be sort of a synopsis?
Yes. I mean, if it's the right setting, if the individual with dementia, the spouse, they both enjoy it and like it, I think, you know, using any artistic intervention helps. Some people are more into music, and for them that will definitely help better. Some patients develop a new interest in music, and then that, you know, we need to bear that in mind too. So kind of experimenting with it and see if it works, that definitely, that's a great idea. And whatever works, you do it more. And
right.
So that should be really the approach.
So it's just like when you're raising children, you know, if you find something that works, you just keep doing it.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah, it would be the same thing. It's a trial
right.
and error, right?
That's right.
Just like
that's
everything
right.
we do. So,
yeah.
You know, sometimes things work and sometimes they don't. And
that
and sometimes
is true.
You have to change them up too. Sometimes it'll work for a while and then it stops working.
That's
so
true.
I think we just have to learn to be flexible,
and
try to use music when we feel that the need may arise. And just try it. I mean,
that's true.
If you turn music on in the middle of an outburst and the outburst stops, do it again.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, these are such basic reactions of human being. And you can even see it in newborns and infants. When they are tantruming and then they're crying, you turn on a meditative music and then immediately they stop. So these are really basic reactions and reflexes we have wired in our brains. And music really, has this basic effect on the brain, because it starts with the hearing of the brainstem, and then it can activate these pathways that affect the whole brain. So you see, you're from a tantrum, within seconds, you go into just, oh, wait a minute, what is this music? This is amazing. Yeah.
Good. That's good to know. I think we probably don't use music enough in FTD. It can be, FTD can be a difficult thing to handle on a regular daily basis, especially now with COVID, when we're all together all the time. Day programs are closed, and some of our resources for having some respite are not there. And I think that causes us to have more incidents, let's say. And I think we need to think more about intentionally using music.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you mentioned that. Music is one of the major interventions during crisis. And then that, if you look at the American Music Therapy Association website, for example, during the hurricanes, I mean, they have a team that goes to those locations and plays for patients or for people who are affected by disasters. And then this is a disaster for us, And then for individuals with dementia, this is a disaster, because we can't have people go out to participate in programs. We're all stuck in our houses. And that's a very stressful situation. And it can, make things worse. And we do see some worsening in symptoms. That's why, using music as a tool during this pandemic and then such a disaster situation and an emergency situation, it does make sense and it does work.
So we should always look to music before we look to drugs.
Definitely.
And look to music to become part of every day so that it becomes more routine. Would that be a good
If it works, definitely. If there's enjoyment and pleasure around it, definitely that should be the thought.
Yeah, I don't think I know anyone who doesn't respond to music in some way.
Very, very few people. Yeah, it's not. There are people who just don't like music. But now almost everybody, because it's and especially, and if you look at the popular music, there is this multimodal, more multi-dimensional way. You have words in it. So people who don't like music, they may like the poetry in the music. Or now you have music videos there. That's why it becomes popular, because people find something in it that they like. So and then I think that's the point, is to figure out what works in terms of, is it the poetry? Is it the actual words in the music? Is it the actual melodies? Or is it the dancing? There are all these aspects that come with music, in a performance.
Well, I really appreciate your time, Dr. B. You're always so helpful. And I want everybody to keep in mind that use music. It can calm the savage beast, as it were. And always try it first. And if it works, use it, and use it frequently. Thank you again for your time, Dr. B. I really appreciate it. And we'll be having this on the podcast. Will be available soon. And we hope everyone will listen to this and take heed of how they can reduce their own stress with music as well.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you for your interest. I would love to see how your listeners think about this, if they have experimented with music, what they think, and it would be interesting to actually hear personal stories.
Very good. Maybe we'll do that at some point, just to have people, you know, as a follow-up to this.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, so we'll plan on that. You're always so good with giving us your time.
Thank you so much. You're welcome. My pleasure.
And you have a wonderful, wonderful day, Dr. B.
Thank you. You too.
Bye.
Okay, bye.